Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Alex King and Joel Elston. Today is Thursday. It is August the 22nd, 2019 at 8 a.m. New York time. That's 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Tokyo, 10 p.m. in Sydney, Australia. But wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I am happy that I am waking up enough that I can drive 6 hours today. that's my thing for the day. Because Joel, actually, Louise and I are heading down your direction.
I was going to say, Joel, Walt's coming to visit.
Yeah, we're heading down to Virginia. Unfortunately, not for a really happy reason, because we're going for my mom's memorial service. But, I mean, the happy part is we're going to get to see some family we haven't seen in a long time. We're going to spend some time on the lake we used to live on. That was a wonderful lake to live on. So there's some good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, what part of Virginia is that?
Smith Mountain Lake near Roanoke.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. Nice. I've heard great things. Never been there, but heard great things about the area.
Check it out sometime. I mean, you know, take a weekend to, you know, rent a condo or something like that. It is a wonderful lake. It's a great lake for recreation of all kinds. And it's just an interesting lake to just ride by boat, because it's actually, I believe, three rivers that were all, there was like a confluence of them, and then dammed it up at the point of the confluence, and it just sort of flooded in all kinds of directions. And as a result, instead of getting like this semi-circular, you know, oval type lake, that kind of a thing, it's got all these interesting angles going off in different directions. And when you explore the coastline, it's fascinating. You can spend an entire day doing it. So,
wow, cool. That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. And this time of year, the water is bath water. So, you know, for people who like to go in and don't want to be in cold water, they can enjoy that. And I know capers aren't going to like that one, but
yeah. Yeah, that sounds like mosquito heaven to me.
No. Actually, that's one thing that Virginia does not have as nearly as many of as New England has. New England has a lot more mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
New England, New York, all that area has, up to Maine, has tremendous amounts of mosquitoes. Virginia, they have a few, but I think they were outlawed a few years ago.
Well, someone should outlaw them here.
So anyway, we're going to do it in 2 days. Normally I would do it as a one-day trip, but we've gotten to the point in our lives where, like, yeah, we don't really want to push it that way. So we're going to do it in 2 days. So,
I was going to say, how are you getting to Virginia in 6 hours? But, you know, I don't question you.
Well, I don't try to drive that fast.
I was wondering. I was like, no. You got here in the Cape in decent time, so I don't know how you roll.
No. Actually, I'm pretty normal on the road. Actually, I'm probably a little bit more conservative than other drivers. I'm not crazy. So I'm one of those drivers who sits as the other drivers are going by. I said, oh, boy, that's an accident looking to happen.
I'm the same way. I was like, oh, dear, that's going to be a problem.
And actually, where Joel lives, right there on 95 going through Richmond, that section there.
Oh, yep.
I mean, Joel, how many accidents are there per day?
Oh,
I mean, it's crazy.
It is. It really is. In fact, where 295 and 95 converge, the general area of where I live. And I'll often use interstates just to get around. And you have to time it, because there are three or four wrecks a day that it is backed up for no explicable reason. You know, you have everybody. I sound really old when you start talking this way, but everybody driving crazy, and it gets into, like you're saying, it creates so much more time, and it's just backed up, and it's very frustrating. There's some bad traffic spots in the world, but I really believe from Richmond to D.C. It is right up there with L.A., Miami, Atlanta, some of these New York City area. It really lines up as some of the worst I've ever seen. It's incredible. Right. In fact, if you look at a map and from Richmond to D.C., it is a, you know, it should be about an hour and a half drive. It really should.
That's what it should be. You're right.
I mean, you know, distance wise, at 60 miles an hour, it would be an hour and a half drive.
Yeah.
And so it's not possible. I've driven it multiple times, and I would rather drive to Raleigh to an airport, which is a few hours away, than trying to get to D.C. or Baltimore airport, just because it's such an unpredictable dead stop almost every time you travel. There's 20, 30 minute dead stop periods every time I've ever driven it. So, it's amazing. It really is. And they've tried adding lanes that all that did was make it worse.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because you're just inviting more people on there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Well, and then at some point those lanes end, and when they converge is where the problem is.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, and so I just find it fascinating. I really do that we live in, with all the technology that we have a really hard time with, getting our roads right. It's
right.
fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also fascinating too, because you have I-66, which comes in from the west, from like Manassas, Fairfax County, that sort of thing. And that highway is certainly more heavily traveled than 95. I mean, just incredible how much traffic that gets every day, but doesn't have nearly the same amount of accidents. And it's not like right. they have done a better job with the HOV lanes or something like that. They're probably worse in some ways, but for whatever reason, I don't know what it is. That route, I mean, it's not a pleasant route to drive in on a commute. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this is a commute that should take 45 minutes and takes 2.5. So, I mean, it's really not a good commute at all. But for whatever reason, people just don't drive as crazy there. I don't get it.
One of the things that I believe, like in the Metro-Dade area in Miami, in South Florida, I believe that it is the difference in driving, that it isn't so much the traffic as that you have a group of people that are insistent on doing 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then you have a group of people. Then you have an older population who are hell bent on not doing more than 42 miles an hour in the left lane.
This is true. And, not an exaggeration.
And that's what happens. It's the difference of speed that causes the problem. Absolutely. If everybody would drive at 50 or 55, it would work. It's just, but they're not going to do that. And mm-hmm. it's traffic's fascinating to me because so much personality stuff takes place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I love about the Richmond area proper, not necessarily when you get right out of the city, overall our traffic compared to other metropolitan areas I've lived in, Tampa, Charlotte, the main two, the traffic in Richmond is not bad within Richmond. There's ways, mm-hmm. To get around, and even at rush hour, it's a pretty easy area. So, that's the thing when I look at of where I want to live. You know, there's areas like I have dear friends and clients that live in Southern California. Mm. I love the weather. I love all that. But when you could be 5 miles away from someplace and it would take, it's a 2 hour drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's crazy when you live in that kind of a congestion.
And they manage.
I guess I'm lucky because I'm seasonal.
That's true.
Like my lanes they converge, but the traffic is seasonal. Like it's only around this time of year.
Yeah, you only
Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's it.
Yes,
right.
Well, it continues in the Cape after Labor Day, but it's a lot less.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah,
yeah, and it's when things seem to be getting better. That you have fewer interlopers, as you like to call them.
Yes, the interlopers tend to travel back home.
Whereas in L.A., I mean, Joel described it perfectly, and what he left out is the highway can be a 12-lane highway, and mm-hmm. they still have that same issue.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Which is insane.
Well, I actually develop a strategy when I'm in LA for driving that's very effective. Mm-hmm. Is you get stuck on one of those loops in the far left lane and you need to get over to the right lane.
Mm-hmm.
People just will not let you over. It's almost like a sport for them. Mm-hmm. So what I will do is I will start swerving back and forth within my lane, appearing to be drunk. And so once you're doing that, then people give you sort of a wide latitude because they're like, ooh, that dude's drunk. And they literally let you over, but I will start swerving like I'm drunk. And then they just get out of the way. It's a really good strategy for that area.
That is hilarious.
And by the way, we are not endorsing this behavior on LOA today, but I will point out that because of the nature of the traffic, even if a cop sees you, he can't get to you.
Yeah. So it's certainly, it's not a strategy, But getting on interstate, it works well. Getting over in lanes, when people think you're out of control, then they're going to say, oh, it's not worth me getting in a wreck and stopping today.
So I
just think it's awesome that we have strategies like that. And sad that, you know, once we ever get focused on our infrastructure and how to deal with all this, our country is going to really thrive. Until then, we're just going to deal with this, you know, traffic as is. And it's, and to be where we're at right now and to see it happen, it's just, it really is a social experiment of we have the answers, but we don't implement them, but yet we complain about them all the time. It's fascinating.
Well, that's it. Oh, go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say, I think we've just come to the mentality that it is what it is. So just deal with it.
You deal with it. And a lot of people just, you know, because it's like, well, you know, if you go to some major cities around the world, like, you know, Hong Kong or, you know, if I've never been to Hong Kong, but I've had friends that have said they're like their central hub in Hong Kong where sort of near the airport where the train or the rail system meets. It is state of the art. It is just, it's beautiful. It's well laid out. Their transportation system, their public transportation system is really good. Well, that's their premier area. It's just amazing. You go to New York City and go to Grand Central Station.
chaos.
It's 1950. And somebody said that if they ever were to do it, the cost of redoing Grand Central Station to state of the art would be over $2 billion.
Wow.
And that's not counting the 9 to 10 months of it being shut down for it to be revamped and the cost of that. So that's why they keep repairing this 1950s technology, and this isn't a law of attraction thing, but I find it fascinating that at some point it's almost like when you accept something that, you know, can we accept it at some point and just move on and say, yeah, we're going to have to feel the pain for 9 months. We're going to have to pay for this, but in the end, it's going to result in a lot better productivity.
Well, actually, I do think it is a law of attraction thing. In fact, I think law of attraction is playing a big, big role in all of this. I mean, I can point to a number of different aspects to demonstrate that. You talk about not just the cost, but the cost in terms of, you know, slow traffic and how it affects commerce and all that kind of thing. Boston went through exactly that thing. By the way, what the Big Dig did was to put in one of the most crazy, highway systems you can possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
this was a highway system that was definitely invented by a committee. It was not invented by an engineer.
No, it was not.
I mean, it's insane. I mean, even after everything is now done, I think it's almost all done, or at least, you know, the vast majority of it is done from what I've seen. I mean, you take your life into your hands.
You sure do.
Your life into your hands just driving the darn thing.
And 1 week you think you know where you're going, you go the same way the next week. It is not the same way the next week.
It is crazy. And I mean, I still am kind of blown away. One of the things that they're dealing with. Now, I understand they're dealing with a very limited amount of space. They're on the harbor. Proper is not a big area. So it's not like there's a whole lot of real estate to work with. But, I mean, is it really all that difficult to understand that you don't want to keep sending people in and out of tunnels in sunny days? I mean, is that really difficult to understand?
I mean, the tunnels serve a purpose, so we do need them.
I mean, I understand that you want to, you need to go under the harbor. I mean, it's not like you can drive through the harbor.
Right.
Okay. But how about giving drivers a way to transition so that you're not driving in blinding sun and then all of a sudden everything went dark?
Well, we tried that and we almost died. So what happened was we tried having the daylight, what do you call those? The special daylight lights that mimic the sun. And people were so amazed by the lights, they were looking up at the lights and crashing into each other. So we had to go back to the old-fashioned regular lights.
Maybe I should be a highway engineer. But to me, this is a really easy problem to solve.
Okay.
You don't go directly from sunlight to dark tunnel. You go through a transition. So the first part that you go through, which lasts maybe 30 seconds, enclosed, but it's brightly lit because it has light coming through the ceiling, like skylight kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That light is. So you make that light like halfway between the sunlight intensity and the lack of light or the very low intensity of the tunnel. So it's like bright, somewhat bright, dark. Now all of a sudden you got a transition going on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put in special lighting for that. It's just the way you build the tunnel.
Well, that's without building extra parts of the tunnel, that was the solution they decided to go with.
And like I said, it was built by a committee. Anyway.
Yes.
Well, and I'm really sure that we can maybe send a copy of this podcast at this point to the committee and see how it
hashtag bright ideas.
Law of attraction. Yeah, we're doing a law of attraction thing ourselves. We're talking about what's wrong with this and it's sort of the mindset because it's I'm not just talking about traffic. I'm talking about life. When in life, I constantly am amazed for me and other people as it's so easy to say, here's what's wrong. And
yeah.
Now I have a solution to it, but everybody else is wrong because they don't agree with my solution. There's multiple things that take place with the law of attraction. But at the end of the day, Alex said something a little while ago, at some point you just got to accept is what is and then move on. And that's a really hard place to get to, especially when you see things that don't make sense. But sometimes it's just simpler to say, here we are. It would be great if it were different. But if I'm going to spend any energy on it not being different, it's like politics. I see people that just all they do all day is gripe about how the versus here we are. This is our reality. Let's deal with it. And that's where you can get all wound up about things. And that's where, I'm not talking about the events. I'm talking about how we feel about things because the law of attraction responds to how we feel.
That's right.
And so when you live this life of this is how it's sort of dictated to us, that anxiety piece or that stress feeling, because this is the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's so illogical. Or we can just accept it is what it is, and any energy I put toward that is keeping me out of balance with the law of attraction at least the balance that I'm seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, I understand what you're saying, and I think there's a great deal of merit to what you're saying. I'm going to point out another thing, though. We do, as deliberate creators, want to be focused on solutions. I mean, just because we're focused on solutions doesn't mean we have to rub it in other people's faces.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we're doing a podcast, in which it's fun to do that.
But,
in general, we can just look for solutions. And in that activity of looking for solutions, we take all the pressure off of ourselves because now we're not dealing with, oh, God, more problems. I can't believe there are more problems going on in my life. You know, and if somebody else doesn't buy into the solution, well, okay, just let it go. That's the other part of it. You got to let that part go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing. When we find frustration in what we're doing, like, for example, between here and D.C., as I mentioned earlier, it's a ridiculous. So I have a couple of options for me personally to deal with that.
Yeah.
I can look at if I need to get to D.C., I have multiple options. There's back ways where I can avoid 90% of the traffic that take an hour longer guaranteed, but it's a consistent hour. I mean, and there's ways to look at that. I can also take a bus. I can take a train. I could, if I want to spend the money, I could fly, or I could not go.
Yeah,
that's the option I take.
Yeah, of course. But I think what happens, and again, where I want to make the law of attraction connection, everything is about perspective and the energy. I'm all about solution-based life, but at the end of the day, your solution has to be based on the reality of what's going on. It would be wonderful to have a vision of how you would build a tunnel under a harbor in the perfect way, but the tunnel exists as it exists at this point. So we could vote on it. We can do that. It's just, my argument has always been it's really easy for someone in New York City to tell somebody in Birmingham, Alabama to live and vice versa, but their realities are greatly different.
Yes.
And so when Alabama people get really upset about how New York people are living, it creates the anxiety that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's just, or, and vice versa. I hear European people say, oh, well, you know, the view of Alabama people is their reality is their reality. And mm-hmm. when you allow someone else's reality to affect your feeling and vibration, that's where we get off track with the law of attraction so easily. And when you work on vibrating on the level you want to, anything that gets you vibrating away from that, it can be anything as benign as traffic or benign, you know, it's just, where are we at with all this? And just like you're saying, Walt, yes, solution focus, but letting go when your solution isn't going to be implemented or other people don't agree with it. My friends who are Trump supporters are baffled that they don't, that the other side doesn't see it the way they do, and vice versa.
And vice versa,
And my people who are anti-Trump folks or that mindset are just not grasping why people can't see it their mm-hmm. way. Yeah. And the truth is, that acceptance of there are differing opinions, and I don't have to agree or even understand that opinion, but I do have to accept that opinion. I don't have to either, but if I want to vibrate at a level that is going to get, I got to let go of not accepting that. That creates that resistance that we talk about every week.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. That resistance too, it'll get you. I mean, that resistance, if you do anything to set yourself up for that resistance, it'll get you. It'll just mm-hmm. come through.
Oh, yeah. Space.
Something we talked about on Tuesday, I want to get your opinion on it. I want to get your take.
Oh, I did too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
one of the things that Alex and Bill and I were talking about on Tuesday was the new way of naming the clinic that his wife runs is the way they describe it now. They call it a pain clinic. And at the time I made the comment, well, aren't they focusing on what they don't like? And Bill's reply was, yeah, but what we found is when you focus on what the client doesn't like, they show up. They show up in record numbers, and it's been producing a tremendously positive, successful business model for them to say, we're going to call this a pain clinic. So I want to know what your take was on that.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. First of all, you're talking about a successful business model.
Yeah.
You're right. You're negative sales, the problem sales, pain mm-hmm. clinic. It by definition, yes, from a business model, fire and brimstone churches sell a lot of times, you know, it's people you create it, but what are you after? Are you after a solution to the pain?
Now, yeah.
It for the business, that's what you think you're after. It's like one of the things that in my industry that is the big difference, you know, it's like there's addiction clinics. There's, the idea that you're going to go replace one drug with another drug and that's a safer answer. So when you're in a pain clinic, you know, there are people who are living in their pain. I think it's two different questions. Is it a great business model? Absolutely. I would call it the ultra pain clinic, the extreme pain clinic, the throbbing pain clinic. I would have even more description. Yeah. You know, I think that would get you more business, but the concept of somehow there's a solution to pain, you're selling the pain, you're selling that an ongoing amount of pain, the treatment of pain. Requires there to be continued pain. So yes, it's a good business model. I agree. It is to me, from law of attraction standpoint, it's exacerbating what the problem is. But I think it's very, very clear that yes, if money is my focus and I want to, you know, Oxycontins are awesome if I want to make a lot of money. That family, I mean, they, it's a brilliant strategy by the family that created that. Mm-hmm. You make the simultaneously you have something, you sell the concept of we will dissolve your pain. We will mm-hmm. relieve. There's great relief in your pain. And the same time, simultaneously taking these medications and relieving your pain creates a dependency on these to relieve pain. Talk about a great business model. Other than tobacco, I know of no better business model.
Well, now Bill would also point out. Bill would also point out to you that his wife, basically approaches pain from a, what you might call a naturopathic viewpoint. And she has a tremendous success level from the way he'll tell it to you with people coming in. He told us a story about, I guess he was a truck driver who, came in with an arm where he couldn't even move his wrist. His wrist was just frozen in place with pain. And by the time they were done with the therapy, he was able to move it completely in all directions with no pain. And his response was something along the line of, what did you do to me? You
know, right.
So that you get that side of it too. So I want to know, how do you tie that part into what you're talking about? Because I think what you're saying is perfectly valid.
And I want to be clear, because I don't want to say this particular clinic is wrong. I'm not saying you can't use that as an entryway and then go to the holistic naturopathic type, which is all my stuff, as you know. Mm-hmm. I'm completely on board with that. But I'm talking about the wording of pain to get attention. Yes. But when somebody's going there, I'm talking about classic law of attraction stuff. You wouldn't use pain in your day to day life. I don't want to get rid of pain. If I'm focused on my pain is what I'm attracting. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about from an advertising standpoint, from, you know, perspective, people who are dealing with pain are filtering for that sign. They're really ready to go. Now, if they're willing to flip over to more of a holistic type, that's an awesome, I love the strategy. Mm-hmm. But are you talking about, it is a great, the business model thing doesn't, you know, President Trump is the expert at law of attraction.
Yes.
I don't always agree with the messages and stuff, but he's great at it. And when you see how that negative side can work, and you can keep reversing it, where using the negative to get to where you want is still okay. So this isn't about this particular clinic, but if you want to get it, the people who are focused on pain in your building, there's nothing better than a pain clinic to do that. The connotation to me, a pain clinic is a pill pushing place, not this place, clearly. Mm-hmm. But when I think of pain clinics, I think of additional pain, of exacerbating concept of pain, furthering mm-hmm. pain. Mm-hmm. That's what I think of. And that's clearly not this place. But, this is one of those areas of the law of attraction when you understand how it works. You can get somebody in on the, this is a pain clinic. Let's get you in here. And then if you can sell them on, yes, here's methods that, reduction of inflammation with natural uses or any of the acupuncture or tapping or any of those methods of distracting hypnotherapy. Mm-hmm. Along with natural anti-inflammatories, I would love that to be a thing. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's what they're doing. And that's great. So, again, you can see to me, we're saying the same thing, but they're sort of, almost using the dark side of the law of attraction in a very good way. And I don't want to, I'm not downing what they're doing. It's just, if I were to do a survey of people, say, when I say the name of the place is pain clinic, what do you think happens here?
Mm.
And I would think 90% of the people go, they use oxycontins to medicate pain is what they do. That would be what most think.
That's probably true. But it's a reversal. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's 90%, but I agree. That's probably what the number one issue would be, or number one response would be. Just that.
Yeah. Well, they actually changed that in the Cape. They, because of the huge opioid problem we have here, they, certain doctor's offices, you can only get opioids at the hospital. So they defer out to the pain clinic for other options as opposed to opioids. So when people come in search of opioids, they're like, oh, well, we're going to refer you to the pain clinic. And people go, oh, yes. Hey. And it's like, no, yeah. That's not what's happening here. We're going to do this, and this. It's like bait and switch.
But that's exactly what I'm talking. That's a great example, Alex.
Yeah.
What I'm talking, because in Florida, which everything happens in Florida. it was the beginning of the pain clinic stuff happened in Florida because they literally opened up pain clinics that were pill mills. That's all they did.
Wow. So yes.
You walked in, the doc, you would try to, you thought you would need to give an explanation. The doctor would tell you to shut up and just say, do you have pain? Yes. What level? 10. Here's the max dose, max amount of oxys.
Yep.
I mean, you pay us $100 and buy the pill at our pharmacy, and it's like printing money. And they had people lined mm-hmm. up daily. So again, so much is a perspective. In your area, they flip that. So a perspective mm-hmm. of pain clinic would have an opposite view yeah. of what someone in Florida would have. And that's what exactly a better way of what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Your perspective of what that says dictates it. Like
right.
if you were to say, you know, most people, when I were to suggest, well, there's natural methods to deal with pain, they will, the most people that weren't into that belief system would be like, oh my God, why am I going to waste my time? None of that stuff
right.
works.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't, because you don't believe it works. And, mm-hmm. and that's the key. When you're half of it, you know, I've been using, you know, the emotional freedom technique a lot with people lately, the tapping methods, and it's incredibly effective once somebody buys into it. Mm-hmm. Half of me getting that to be effective is selling them, or at least explaining the psychology and the science behind it, why it works. Once they buy into it, they find it very effective. And there's some people that the super skeptical, I will not even begin to approach it with them mm-hmm. because it you're wasting your time until they come to an acceptance of that. So your perspective dictates, you know, that's the law. The pain clinic is neither a positive or a negative term. It's mm-hmm. based on the perspective that accompanies that.
Yeah.
That's true. Perspective is everything. No doubt mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah.
And Alex, you said you had something from the Tuesday show too. What was the thing you were thinking about?
Oh, I wanted Joel's opinion on the butterfly effect. Because he's very familiar with timelines as I am due to Marvel movies. And on Tuesday, Joel, we were talking about if you could speak to your past self, what advice would you give? And then it got into the fact that there's certain things that you cannot tell your past self because it'll deter the timeline of that you're currently on. And Walt disagrees.
Right.
Well, I partially agree, but I also think it's a little bit different from that. I mm-hmm. see the butterfly effect, especially the program, I guess it was a movie. The movie mm-hmm. was basically laying out a perfectly laid out negative spiral. And all I have to do is just see negative spiral and know, well, that just means you're focusing on what you don't want. Very simple. And you're focusing on a lot. So mm-hmm. from my perspective, it's about, okay, well, instead of focusing on what I don't want, why don't I focus on what I do want? If I focus on what I do want, I'll create a positive spiral and I'll get positive results. So that was the argument I was taking.
Well, my argument was it doesn't matter if it's positive or negative. The point is you're changing the timeline by eluding things of the future. That was my point.
And I don't have a problem with that. Well, it's part of what we teach. It's part of what we talk about. We talk about, for instance, going back into our past through therapeutic type approaches.
Yeah.
And reshaping the way an experience was. We had this really, really negative experience. Cindy and I were talking about this yesterday. There was a story that Neville Goddard tells about a woman who was in her early 40s. And mm-hmm. for over 39 years, she had been suffering excruciating back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And one day she realized, after hearing a Neville lecture, she realized that when she was a very young girl, she had had an incident riding a swing. She had been on a swing mm-hmm. and had come off the swing. She was trying to fly in the air to land on her feet and miss and mm-hmm. hit the ground hard. Mm. And her mother got all upset because she saw that she was injured and kind of reinforced this pain cycle in her that stayed with her for the next nearly 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And once she realized what that case was, based on Neville's recommendation, she started reimagining that scene with her landing on her feet and celebrating with her mom that she could do it, and then going and doing it again and landing on her feet and doing it a few times, you know, doing it for a number of days at a time. And after, like, I think it was 3 days, the pain was gone. This pain that she had lived with for nearly 40 years was gone.
Mm.
Now, that's a form of reshaping the future.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's perfectly legitimate.
All right.
Co-sign on that. Well, we're talking about different things, and that's the what you're talking about, Walt, is reframing. where you take past traumatic events and you reframe them to, you know, I've given that example 100 times on the show about, you know, me eating out of a trash can at the depth of my misery, how I eventually had to, I was able to reframe what that was. It went from a traumatic event to a very important milestone event in my life. Mm-hmm. And my perspective of that event, the event never changed. So that is not really the butterfly effect. That's me just going back and reframing. You can mm-hmm. take anything and reframe it and see where it's like, you know, the idea that this one of my clients was telling a story, and I'm not advocating this, you know, but it worked for him. He was very frustrated. He was on his way to a business meeting, and he was trying to get funding for this solar project that he wanted to do. He's really passionate about that. So mm-hmm. he's in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. His car breaks down. He's very frustrated. He calls AAA. They have a little food bar there. At his convenience store, his little rundown convenience store. And out of boredom, he's sitting there and his phone's about to die and he's talking to the cashier and there's a $20 scratch off lottery ticket that's hanging weirdly. And she said, it's the last one. Nobody wants it. Like, that's a bad thing. I don't know what that means.
I don't
either.
He buys
it and he wins $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the amount roughly he needed to do his funding. He actually got his funding in a different way. So, you know, that was the car breaking down was a transformative event that put him in a place for something to happen. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, to me, the butterfly effect, if you were to go back in time and him change the event where he took a different form of transportation that never put him in that place, that never happened. There's unlimited timelines that take place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of, you know, quantum theory about that as well.
Yes.
But you know, the idea that we are in control of what we're attracting and our perspective of it and the events that take place. Yes, I do think you could go in theory. You could go back and say, I don't want this to happen or you don't do this. And it would be, you know, a change. But that could send a quantum theory effect down the road where mm-hmm. everything changes. I mean, there's some neuroscientists that, you know, deal in metaphysics that I know that believe there are unlimited timelines of all mm-hmm. different shapes taking place at all times. And you are in one of them, you may be president. The other one, you may be dead already. I mean, there's just countless timelines. And they think that's, and they have some reasons of why they believe that. And some of them even believe that people can, that really get in tune with that, can go in between the different timelines. And it may not be limited to our reality today. There may be multiple planets, so to speak. Now, that's getting real crazy in thought, but the reframing that Walt's talking about is really not based on the butterfly. It's sort of it's not a butterfly effect in normal terms of quantum science.
Mm-hmm.
It is thinking you take any event and you can choose to view it. However, I know people that went through unbelievable trauma, the growth mindset that, is spoke about and they grow from it. People that go through the exact same trauma are defeated by it and get into an addictive spiral and end up dead at 30. I mean, it's a response and a perspective of how you look at things. Either mm-hmm. things make you stronger or they defeat you. That's a mindset. And you can at any point in time go back and reframe how you're looking at something.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to do that. However, the butterfly effect, how I see it, is if you had the ability to physically go back in time and literally alter a situation
mm-hmm.
that would set a new chain of events going forward, that's a whole different theory, too, in my mind. It's two separate theories. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Not to me. Sorry. to me, it's splitting hairs is all it really is. Because in both cases, what we're doing is we are altering where we're going into that multiverse that you talked about. I think you described that beautifully,
sure.
by the way. So we're basically saying, instead of going with this thread, I'm going to go with that thread because I've changed my way about thinking about that. I don't think it's right. all that important whether or not we physically change the event in the past or mentally change it. I think it still has the same effect. So yeah, I mean, technically, I guess there's a difference, but I mean, it's like a difference that isn't really a difference.
But you said it's like splitting hairs. Well, the whole concept of quantum science is splitting
hairs. No doubt about it.
There's a billion atoms in one hair, so you're even getting, yes, you're right, you're splitting hairs. Within that context, you're absolutely right. All of this is how you see things. At the end of the day, that's it. And, you know, I don't know how all of it works, but I do know for me, I'm in charge. The fact that I'm in charge of how I view anything. That mm-hmm. is the foundation of my belief system. That is, and when I view it the right way, I attract more of what I'm trying to get when I understand how to use this. That's the basis of everything. So when I go back in time and I say, look, mentally, me eating out of a trash can was necessary for a chain of events to happen and give me this incredible journey that I have, I would not ever go back and change me eating out of a trash can. I don't want to go eat out of a trash can again. Yeah, I would never go back and change it because it would alter. I had to get the perspective. At one point, eating out of a trash can was one of the worst things that ever happened to me. Today, it is not that at all. It was a necessary event to put me in a position to have this incredible chain of events happen. So, but I'm in charge of how I view that. There are many people that live a life that, and this is not judgmental, it's just a frustrating thing for them, I can imagine, where they're stuck in their story and they can never reframe it, and then they're accepting what they were dictated from that all along, just like the lady about the pain brain or whatever term you use, where she went in and when she realized that it was a narrative that had been fed to her a long time and she was in control of it, she was free from it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times people can't get free from it. So to me, the idea that there's a mental butterfly effect, which I've actually seen happen. I really do. I mean, I went back and reframed how I'm viewing it and it changed things. That's factually I can speak to for me, only for me. And there may be a physical butterfly effect that I have yet to be able to do, where I physically could go back in time and literally make a different decision. I haven't mastered that yet. I'll let you know when I do.
That'll make a whole show right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for right now, I can factually speak to my ability to reframe things and change my reality. That happened. That's not. And people say, well, you're wrong with that. But you can say whatever you want to say. That happened to me. And I have proof of how that happened to me. And so I can't be talked out of that. I have the ability to reframe everything. So, it is splitting hairs. It is, we get to the same thing, but whether it's physical or mental, that I don't know if there's another side to it. One I have lived, one I see in theory, and it doesn't matter, but I do have that, I've seen life altered. If you look at, when I ended up in Rock Hill, South Carolina, there was an incredible chain of events that had that happen. Simultaneously, my son TJ, who I eventually adopted, was taken from his family in foster care, went through a chain of events himself. And for us to simultaneously be in Rock Hill, South Carolina at the same time, me be in a position to be his foster parent at first, all the chain of events that led to that, it's, you can't even quantify the math behind the odds of that. It's just for our paths to cross at that exact moment in that exact set of circumstances, I'm a convicted felon, single male, who was asked to adopt a child. What are the odds of that? I mean, that doesn't happen. And so within that, for him to need a family and for him to have been through what he'd been through and my set of circumstances match that, it's just a trillion to one or whatever I don't know what higher numbers are than that, but one of those crazy numbers after that to one. And yes, I get to reframe how all that happened and how I view it. So I know for a fact I have complete dominion of how I view things. Yeah. It makes my reality what it is. However, I don't know for a fact, because I've yet to experience this, can I ever physically go forward or backward in time? I'm not aware of me being able to do that. If I could, then I would be able to speak to where that takes place. But I do know the mental side of reframing is a form of a butterfly effect. But I do think that there's unlimited possibilities within the possibilities.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. And in fact, if you found that method, and by the way, when you do tell us, because we want to know too, but when you find that method for actively going back in time and making a change, you, I think, will go and experiment with that or whatever with a frame of mind that it's going to be okay, because you're going to focus on what you like. You're not going to spend a lot of time focusing on fixing what you don't like. And that's the main point I was trying to make on Tuesday. The people in that movie, they weren't going back to fix this thing they didn't like. I mean, they were screwed from the get-go. They could have just stopped the movie right there. I mean, could anybody who knew Law of Attraction go tell them, you're focused on the wrong thing. You're going to get a bad result here.
Well, and you know, and there's showing a little bit of my nerdy side. There's a Star Trek: The Next Generation, which was a great show to me. Mm-hmm. It had an episode where Captain Picard was given the opportunity to go back in time and fix his mistakes, because was a reckless young man.
Right,
and he went back in time. He didn't do this event. There was an event where he got into a fight where he was stabbed in the heart and he had to get a heart replacement and all this. And so somebody asked him, and this real powerful entity asked him, well, if you could go back in time, what would you fix? He said, I wouldn't want to have that reckless youth that where all this was created. Mm-hmm. Well, he was allowed to go back in time, step away from the fight, step away from the reckless behavior. Mm-hmm. But he then lived the life that would have happened, which did not have him as commander of the ship. It had him as just some member of the crew charting charting the stars. And a very boring thing. And he even went to the captain of the ship, which was his first officer in the real timeline, and asked him, what can I do to be better? And they said, you're a real solid guy, but you never step out of your safety zone or your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And he realized in the ending of the show, he realized that he wanted his life back that had the recklessness. It was necessary for him to be captain of the Enterprise. And he was granted that. And he went and made the decision to get in the fight and get his heart stabbed again. So it was, to me, that is it. It's a great example of that.
Yes. I agree.
What you're describing is a wonderful example of preference. Which did he prefer? Yeah. Now that he was presented with the two different options, and probably there were actually, you know, an infinite number of options, but the two that they presented, which one did he prefer? And he knew which one he preferred. He preferred to actually go through the trauma of getting in that fight and so forth, because he liked the light that came afterwards so much better.
Right.
So once again, it's all about preference.
To me, the secret of all of this, and my perspective, is exactly what we're saying here. This sort of hones it in. I think we're all saying the same thing from sort of a different angle.
Yes. But
this is the point. We're all given this life script. I personally choose, I believe we choose our life script, but that's a debatable topic. and the answer is, the real thing is, within the parameters of the strengths I've chosen in my life and the deficits that I've chosen in my life and the scenarios that I've chosen in my life, how do I navigate it? How do I, you know, how do I create a new thing? And I'm in charge of, when I was in the middle of the depths of my misery, there is no possible way. I mean, I was, in people who have experienced deep, deep, deep depression, I was literally living a life where I was trying to figure out how to die every day. That's how deep it was. So the idea that I could see at that point that that would ever be a positive is nonsensical. It just isn't while I'm in it, in that portion of my timeline. However, all of that led me to new discoveries, which led me to new discoveries, which put me here, which put me there, which led me to my law of attraction discovery, and then the freedom and feeling like I feel today. So if I had to go through what I went through back then to feel like I did today, I would choose that every time because I feel incredible today.
Same.
And that's a very important time when I'm explaining that to the, you know, younger people who are going to, and I say, look, you're not going to get this. I just want you in 20 years to remember what I said because you're not going to get it now.
Yeah.
You know, and the few that do, if you can ever let people see that, at 20 and really have them believe that, wow, talk about controlling things in life. I mean, what an amazing perspective to have from a young age. But most people have to get through their journey to see, wait a minute, I see where this led to this, led to this, led to this.
Yep.
Wow, without all that, I wouldn't have what I have. And and it's just amazing to see. But there's people that live a life and they never, because they don't give themselves the opportunity, they just live a life of lack. And they never allow themselves to see how their stuff strengthened them, and they're traumatized by it, and that's how it just they stay traumatized their entire life, and that's very sad to me.
There's an interesting piece to that too, because what you're describing is basically somebody when they're in that state, they're in that place that you were in those many years ago, where there was no happy thought, there was no good place. When you're in that state, you're in an extreme state. I mean, that's not the way most people experience life most of the time. So it's an extreme state. But it's also a state of really, really high level resistance. I mean, you were resistant probably to just about everything at that point. And so another way of describing the same thing that you just described is to say you were learning how to let go of that resistance. And I say that because I mean, I remember the first time that phrase was thrown at me, you know, let go of your resistance. And my first reaction was, I'm not holding on to it. And I didn't know how I was holding on to it. And I suspect that if you had queried yourself at that time, Joel, you wouldn't have known at that time how you were holding on to it. Because when we're in that, we don't know how we're doing it. We're holding on to this thing that we don't even know we're holding on to.
Right.
But nevertheless, we are. We're holding on to this resistance. And the way that you described beautifully to let go of resistance is to recognize I needed to go through that. I just needed to go through that. And that became a launching pad for me to be able to do all these amazing things later on in life as I let go of that resistance. When I finally let go, oh boy, what a relief that was. I can only imagine how much of a relief that was.
And you don't want to let go. I want to let go of the resistance. And at the same time, I don't want to let go of the lesson. And that's the value of the experience, you know, the idea that I was somewhere the other day and, I was giving a little talk and, you know, a small group and there's a younger guy there sort of getting into this public speaking type thing. And he goes, I'm always so nervous when I talk. And I looked at him and I was like, really? I haven't been in that place in so long. It's like, I don't get this. I don't understand, but yet I can see. And I said, well, and he said, do you have any advice for me? And I go, no, I want you to one day understand that you won't be, but right now that didn't help you today. You know, you're nervous as hell, you know? And he's like, that wasn't very helpful. I guess it wasn't.
It will be in 10 years though.
Yeah. And you know, I said, but part, don't take yourself so seriously. That was the advice. I said, get up here, have fun. Tell them you're nervous. This is an audience. Tell them, you know, and so he spoke first. It worked out really well. He wanted to say, he said, I will let everybody know I am nervous. First, one of my first talks. And so then he did a great job. He nailed it. Everybody loved his talk. Then I talked and I said, I have to spill the beans. I'm not nervous at all. I don't give a shit what anybody says. And everybody died laughing. It was just, it was the perfect thing. I said, I'm too old to be nervous anymore. And it was a very good talk and everybody, cause it was a great contrast in that, you can see it. It's a tangible thing that the answer for me is this beautiful way that we live a life. And, we're able to, the rear view mirror gives us answers that we never know existed. When I was in the depths of my misery, there's no way I could be talked out of the depths of my misery. I had to work my way out of the depths of my misery. I had to grow mm-hmm. from the depth. It strengthened me. I learned to fix this. I had to literally rebuild my life and you know, step by step. And I was viewing it as misery the entire time. Mm-hmm. However, it strengthened me. When I stopped viewing it that way, I said, I survived all that life has thrown at me. I survived it. Not only did I survive, I thrived in it. Mm-hmm. I'm a thriver. Mm-hmm. I'm beyond a survivor. I'm a thriver. And then that became my mantra. That became my mindset. And then that became my reality. Mm-hmm. And that's the law of attraction at work there. It's all the same thing, but there's a million different ways to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what gives us a podcast to talk about every week, you know, 5 days a week, actually, which reminds me, I got to do the promos before we're done here. So, I'm only talking to the 10 to 15% of you who are not yet subscribers, because most of our listeners have subscribers. But if you're not a subscriber, this is the depth of conversation you get with every single episode. You know, they're all different. I mean, the conversations are all different. Because mm-hmm. like Joel just alluded to, I mean, the number of different ways of looking at this are literally endless. And mm-hmm. so we are determined to look at all of them. And I'm not sure if we're actually going to get there, but boy, it's going to give us a lot of episodes to do. So you don't want to miss any of them. And it's very simple. We're on all the platforms. I mean, if you have a favorite platform, you know, whether iTunes or, you know, Pandora or whatever, feel free to look for us on there. Just look for LOA Today. But if you can't find us for whatever reason, which will be really unusual, just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net, and you'll find instructions right at the top of the page. Just click, 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 and like that, you're subscribed. And then, of course, once you've subscribed, celebrate and tell everybody else about it so that they can know where they can get their daily doses of happy as well. And feel free to watch us on YouTube. Alex, how did somebody watch us on YouTube? Because it's fun to watch the live stream.
It is fun to watch the live stream. So what you do is you go to YouTube, whether you hit your app or whether you type it in your browser, and you search for LOA Today podcast videos. And once you see that, you will hit the subscribe button. And next to the subscribe button, there's a little bell. And make sure you click always so you will always be notified when we're live.
Always, always. You don't want to miss a show. Do not miss a show. You are commanded not to miss a show. No, seriously.
You will ruin the timeline if you miss a show.
The butterfly effect. Oh, my God. So hopefully we haven't traumatized too many people with their butterflies. But including the speaker who spoke before, Joel, who clearly had butterflies in the stomach.
I like that segue. That was cute.
Yeah. He did a really good job. And afterwards, the idea that what in life, when you're able just to be where you're at, instead of trying to get up there and act like, you know, he's 26 years old giving a talk in front of, you know, 1,000 people. Mm. Trying to act like you're not nervous will have it. Just own it. Just feel it. And you endear yourself with the audience. And at the end of the day, they all relate. And he relaxed almost immediately. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really cool thing. Knowing that when you are willing to address and acknowledge your greatest fear or your greatest weakness, that you end up with a great result. That's a really reassuring thing.
I respect that. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It works good.
It works really, really good. Well, thank you guys. Joel, tell people how to reach Joel Elston, the coach, first of all, before we leave.
JoelElston@gmail.com is the best. I do want to mention, cause I do get several emails from people. I eventually respond to everyone, but I am so busy sometimes. It may be a couple of days. I get people to get frustrated, like, you're not answering my emails. I can't answer it immediately, but I will get to it. I save them all and answer them.
It's true. I mean, I know if I need to contact Joel, unless it's something that's really, really emergency situation, I'll leave him a note, and I'll expect a response in about 4 or 5 days, and if it comes sooner, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to have your emergency 4 or 5 days in advance.
Well, if it's an emergency, I'll let him know, hey, I gotta get an answer on this right now. And he'll see it and he'll respond to it.
Yeah. You know?
But, yeah. I mean, emergencies happen like once in a blue moon. So it's not.
Facts.
When was the last time I even contacted you about an emergency? I can't even remember.
I mean, if you were to call or text or whatever, if you're emailing me and say, I need to speak, of course I do that. But when it comes to, like, you know, I have a question from a listener who asked me about, you know, brain health and schizophrenia. Well, that's not a 5-minute answer, and I will answer that email, but that's, I got to get into you know, all the disclaimers and all that's attached to that, then we can answer that. So, it really is. So I always do answer, but that's really important to understand.
Yeah.
And Alex, I know I promised for 3 days running now that I'm going to read the script, but now that we're going away, I will actually have time to read the script, you know?
And you'll be in the right mindset because you'll be relaxing on the lake and it'll be fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm going to get back to you about that. Any spoilers people need to know about in the TV land?
Not in the TV world, but there is a huge thing going down with Spider-Man not being included in the MCU universe. I don't know if you heard, Joel, but Marvel is in a fight with Sony over Spider-Man, so he might not even be, spoiler alert, the next Iron Man.
Wow. Well, first of all, yes, I have read that. I know that at the end of the day, something that's going to make $1 billion,
right,
they will figure it out.
That's what I'm saying.
They will get there. You don't leave $1 billion on the table.
It no, you sure don't.
There. The drama at this point, they will figure out a way.
Yes.
I'm a big Terminator fan, and that franchise has allegedly been dead 80 times, and there's always a way to bring something back.
Yes, agreed.
And on that cheery note, we're going to say thank you very much for listening. I'll be away for the next few days, but I'll be back talking to you next Wednesday when I am talking with Cindy Chavez about Neville Goddard. So be sure to join us then. We'll see you guys next week on Thursday. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.